Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more. All for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Haynes, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, Inc., based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. This is Sandy Johnson in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
And I'm Nolan Haynes from Nolan Haynes Creative in hot and steamy Montclair, New Jersey.
Hey, like I was saying earlier, Nolan, I just need you to cool it off, you know, a little bit after the 4th of July when I make my trip out to New York.
Good thing about New York is you get to go in and out of buildings, though.
Yeah. Well, this one I'm actually driving up to Connecticut, doing a meeting, coming back. But then, Sandy, if you could, you know, kind of make that cool front, go over to your area, because I'm going to be in Chicago with for the weekend with my daughter after that.
Oh,
so I'm very
fun.
Excited about that.
Oh, well, you're going to be your daughter that's in the Navy?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm kind of doing this business trip and then swinging by Chicago on my way home with my wife and
oh,
my other kids.
Nice.
What's happening in studios for us? I'll say, first of all, what's happening is I know my day today will be busy because there is not often, if ever, where we've done the recording literally the day before. So I'm going to spend the day audio editing so that we can get the podcast live by midnight tonight. So it's live at Tuesday, tomorrow morning. So I got a lot of time blocked out to kind of go through all the steps in converting this into a full podcast. So it's going to be an exciting day for me. What are you guys doing?
Well, you get to stay in the air conditioning.
And it'll be real time. It'll be more real time podcast.
Hey, Troy, well, while you're doing that, I'll be doing your kind of stuff. I'm working on a widescreen presentation, a 90-foot wide presentation, which we've already talked about and I've already asked your advice on. But it's been a couple of years since I've done one. So it's exciting, but also, you know, lots of technical things to keep in mind and been on the phone back and forth with the AV people.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, getting that conversation.
Yeah, we got a lot of didn't always get the answers I wanted, but... You know, but we're talking.
Do you know the pixel size? Because 90 feet is arbitrary to pixels.
Yeah, it's 7,000 something by like 1,200 high or something.
Yeah, that's pretty long and wide.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we are, so we're setting up the PowerPoint file at 56 inches wide. This is the AV company preferred that size because that, as you know, that is the widest that PowerPoint can go is 56 inches. So we're doing as much as we can.
That's great. I'm just continuing to work on rebranding of about 1,000 slides. That's between two clients, but it's fun. You know what? It's really fun right now. I'm done with my big conferences. I'm doing what I love to do, and that's create slides, presentations
awesome.
For people. Yeah. And I did
are
just
these,
oh, go ahead.
Are these clients you've worked with before?
It is. Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes. I did the original templates, did the rebranded templates for both clients. So the transition... it's pretty easy, I have to say.
Yeah, we go through this phase where everybody wants the template right away. And like corporate, we haven't worked with before. I'm sure a lot of people listening will be nodding their head. You know, we go, well, I'm like, well, you know, there's this kind of this branding education for us. We'd love to take that template and actually build out some of those slides, you know, those presentations. Because we may actually tweak things as we go through. We're like, oh my gosh, this is really not the best choice when we start applying it to hundreds. You know, it's kind of that branding education on our part. And then the projects are... always great. I always have to charge a little more for the upfront project. I'm like, you know, hey, we're really learning your styling and your communication. So you know, future projects will actually be a little bit more concise and quick
and
budget friendly, maybe.
I just estimated a project like that. And you know what I call it? I call it beta testing the template. So we build the template and then we beta test it with the first presentation. And then we launch the template
after
the fact.
I mean, I really try not to do a template without at the same time designing whole boilerplate slides.
That's right. That's right.
I know we're totally derailed from our, we haven't even started our topic, but do you guys start with this is like a total template talk. We should continue this on.
If you missed it.
Do you start, if the client just says build a template, like we do a lot of one-off events.
I hang up the phone.
No. We do lots and lots of those. But I actually have a slide deck. We call it it's a generic slide deck. It has some tables. It has some line charts. It has some, you know, text. It has some images. And we see how things flow into it to begin with. But then it also gives us a chance to actually do a little formatting. So it's a very, very quick formatting. But just to see if everything on the template's working.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, I do that too as I'm building it. But, you know, like you said earlier in our conversation, once you get down the line and you start actually building out their content, you learn things and you might tweak the template, a layout.
Oh, you know what? I also did a really fun, I'll hijack the what's happening thing because this was actually really fun. Last week, did a really fun client request. I haven't had this in a long time, which is what's really funny because the process I used before we went to test it, it either didn't work in Windows 10 or Office 2016. I'm not sure which one broke it. But the request was, is they wanted the audience to vote for a winning video. So they had, you know, it's a corporate event. They had all the divisions submit videos of certain things. And the MC wanted to do a live audio capture, basically an applause meter. You know, the louder the clapping, the needle goes up and you see it. And I was like, oh yeah, sure, no problem at all. You know, here we can add that into the project. And sure enough, the one I had used, you know, a while ago suddenly doesn't work. We went to code it in and just couldn't make the thing work. So we found another solution, required a little more coding on our end to create it. And it was, to the audience, it was totally seamless. We took their corporate template, we customized the background of the audience applause meter app. The needle was even in their corporate colors. So it went over great. The audience never saw a change from presentation content to applause app prize. You know, we take a line in from the audio board. I kind of explain, like, listen, I'm actually taking a line from you. We need a microphone, like a shotgun microphone on the stage, you know, this, that. The only bummer was it wasn't actually in PowerPoint like I've done in the past. It was actually a separate application running, another computer. We just switched it over. But it was kind of a fun request.
Yeah, I've never done anything like that before. Now, you know what's going to happen? I'm going to get that request just because it's out there.
What's happening in news?
Well,
can we go there?
Yeah, let's talk about it. As a matter of fact,
because there's a lot.
I know. I wanted to bring up that hack that's been going on. And what's happening is hackers have developed malware that can infect your computer by just hovering over a PowerPoint hyperlink.
You know, I know you'll describe it, but here's the deal. They call out PowerPoint by rolling over PowerPoint, but couldn't it be like Excel can have images that are linked? Word can have things that are, Google Docs can have things that are linked images, but PowerPoint got called out. But go ahead and describe it. It's scary. I mean, it's a concern.
What it does is it captures your web as you hover over it. And it's a link or an image. I should clarify that. But as you hover over it, it captures web browser information, and that's how it allows remote access to your computer.
Yeah.
Yikes. Jeez.
Yeah. Linked image. So it's sometimes when you roll over an image, it says where it came from, which is why I use FixLinks Pro from PP Tools to remove all of those instantly.
But that's what
it is. Is it PC only?
That is a great question.
I did not see any.
I would imagine it is, but you know what? Let me look on the Trend Micro.
And is it? Did they fix it, or is it still out there?
Oh no, it's still out there.
It's still out there.
Great.
Yeah, because it's not. The problem is, it isn't. Well, okay. Here's where Sandy. This is where the. When you open up a presentation, it has that yellow bar that says, hey, I'm protecting you from the world.
Yes.
I can't remember what you call it.
That's where it comes into play.
That is actually what a protected view.
Yeah.
You know, those annoying protected view things in PowerPoint are actually what are saving us from executing. So we can see the rollover, but it can't transmit it if you're in protected view. So protected view is actually helpful. Although in most cases, I would say everybody would think in practical life, we just say, okay, let me work on my file.
So here's the deal. When it comes from us, It's you're going to be safe unless you have a designer. Now tell me this, what could a Google image be infected and somebody paste that into their PowerPoint unknowingly?
It came from the example they have in the article, which we'll post, Trend Micro. They've showed an email that had some ridiculous, you know, you'd have to. First of all, you'd have to be dumb to click on it. It's
right.
Not, it's
like, don't click on it.
We're going to infect the world. Look at this photo. You know, and curiosity would say, it's like, you know, driving by a car accident. Don't look at the accident. Everybody's got to stop. And you know, I'm in Southern California. We have car issues. but you know, I hadn't really thought about this, but if I do have a presentation I'm concerned about, I first view it in Outlook, in the browser there, because that's a sandbox. It can't actually launch anything from there. And the second thing is if it's open, I have run PP Tools FixLinks Pro because it goes through and it strips out all the data that, in this case, it would literally eliminate this because it strips out all links of all content and replaces it with either local if it's available. So you could use it actually as a safety measure. Maybe we should talk to Steve and rebrand it as a safety feature of his add-in.
That's a great idea.
I got another one, and this one's actually good news. And you know, Microsoft is doing a lot. I mean, they're really rolling out a lot. I'm kind of generally amazed. But this one, they have an export to PDF is available on the Office iOS apps. So directly in, you know, on your phone or your iPad, you could take your Word document and you could create a PDF of it right then and send it off. So, you know, it's just kind of a neat deal. Now, here's the deal, though. It's a brand new announcement just last week. It's not on all rolled out Office. You know, if you're on the fast insiders, it's already there. And I'm sure it'll be the slow insiders next. And, you know, it'll move on down. So it's starting with version 2.2, and that's 170.605. But here's the deal. It's only for Word and Excel at this point. Word and Excel can export it. PowerPoint, it literally says in the article, PowerPoint support is promised. So
okay.
Microsoft said they promised it. So it's kind of funny. They did roll it out for two of the apps. I would think it would be the same mechanism, but it's, again, just making it so we can do more on a mobile device. And I think that's pretty cool news.
It is.
I'll post a link to the whole Microsoft thing about it if anybody's interested.
Is there any good news?
Well, I thought that was kind of a good promising, you know, there's
oh, well,
another
no, one. No, is there,
you know, I got one more and we'll follow up on this on the next one. Cause this is literally just from this weekend. I got to open up my browser to this webpage that I was reading. Worship. Okay. New features, new PowerPoint and Word viewers. See Excel. They're left out on this one. Now I have not tested this. I literally was reading this morning. The new features you'll see in the coming days. And we're excited to announce a new streamlined web experience for instantly viewing Word and PowerPoint files in OneDrive and SharePoint document libraries, which will, anytime you open up a web-based presentation, it's using OneDrive or SharePoint in the back end. You may not know it, but that's what it is. It basically says they've got a whole reduced clutter screen interface, instant loading. You can share, rename, download file information. I mean, it's got a lot of really...
So I think the whole thing is that it's more real time than it's been in the past. You know, when you're collaborating, you may have to wait five or 6 seconds, and now it's supposed to be more real time.
Yeah. So we'll report back on that. I'm hoping to kind of get a chance to play with it over the next couple of weeks, see if it comes live for us. It's not right now. I get the same interface I've seen before when I open up a file. Nolan, anything?
What's going on? Let's see. Prezi. So we're not just PowerPoint. Prezi, a couple weeks ago, or maybe about a month ago at this point, introduced Prezi Next, which is their next iteration or next generation of the software. And it's not, you know, just like an upgrade. It's a whole new platform. It's now they've finally moved from Flash to HTML5. They've rewritten everything and in the process have removed lots and lots of features. It works differently. It does not look, it has a learning curve, even if you've been using Prezi. Oh. And perhaps worst of all, if you are signing up now for it for Prezi, you can only use Prezi Next. You have to already have been a member or have a subscription to use the old version. Guess what? As well, you cannot export from the old version to the new version.
If
you
have an old Prezi,
oh my goodness,
you can't move from the old to the new. On top of it, it is ridiculously expensive. You know, yes, there's still a free version, but that's not going to do much for people because that means it's all public and you can't do much with it. So I learned a lot of this in a Presentation Guild webinar hosted by Jim Harvey last week. And they used Prezi, his company uses Prezi all the time, and they just could not have been more disappointed and more down. It was ironic because we had scheduled the webinar before this announcement, but it's just, I think it's death for them. I can't, you know, it's similar to, I feel like, when Apple took away Final Cut Pro and gave us like the dumbed down kindergarten version of it. Yeah, and it's, you know, it's like Prezi telling its whole user base, we know what's best. You don't need this. Here, use this now.
Sounds like someone else we know.
Yeah, Apple.
Microsoft has been
guilty. But honestly, come on, I'd give
not
it
lately.
To them.
Not lately.
Well, Microsoft's here. Always, to a fault, backwards compatible.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, right.
I know.
So, good point. So, look, I haven't created a Prezi in a couple of years, and I just can't see myself going back now. I mean, with everything that's going. And so, you know, yes, maybe they will put some of these features back in, but I mean, the whole structure is different. And what I looked at, it's you can't even get a 1,000-degree picture of your whole canvas anymore because they're different like sections and subsections. It's just kind of insane. I just can't imagine recommending it to a client at all at this point. I just can't. So anyway.
Well, there's a hashtag for this segment, for this session. It'll be hashtag.
RIP Prezi. I think I already did that.
You did? Okay.
Yeah. So that's disappointing, but you know.
We just used Prezi last week, one of my show side ops. But we used the client's computer because, again, well, anyways, it's kind of funny. We didn't even have to look into it because the client said, no, I'm going to run it, this and that. We made all the arrangements for it. You know, we got the viewer file so that we could run it on a backup computer from the show backstage computers. But I'll have to ask what it was because it just happened.
It was probably, I'm sure it was the old version.
Tuesday, Wednesday. Yeah, I'm thinking it would be. But
you're not being forced to update or anything, are you?
I don't know the particulars. I do know that if you're starting from scratch now, if you're not a current customer, you have to use the new version.
Okay.
So there is some sort of, you know, grandfathered in. You can still use what they're calling classic now. But it's kind of like, you know, Squarespace did something similar. And they may have done it a couple of times. I used to be with Squarespace. And then they moved I was on like Squarespace 4 and then they moved to Squarespace 5 or whatever it was. It was a complete rewriting of the program to the point where it was not, I couldn't just say, hey, I couldn't just take my site and say, hey, apply one of the, you know, apply Squarespace 5. I had to do this complicated export. And then I went to look at the new version and it just didn't look at all like the old one. And so I stayed on the old one for a while and I kept running into things where like, hey, you can only do this on the new version. And I said, that's it. See ya. Mm. And I went to WordPress because
the pricing isn't that bad. I mean,
it tops out at $60 a month.
The only thing it adds is the Prezi analytics, which could be very cool. Analytics are big and on the fly analytics. But it's $19 a month for the version.
When you compare that to Microsoft Office, which is $100 a year.
Yeah. Well, it's dropped in price. And that $100 a year is good for 5 computers if you do any type of subscription or run down to Costco.
And it's not just one bit of software. It's 20 pieces of software.
Oh, it's a great value. There's no doubt about it.
Microsoft, PowerPoint can do everything that we've always wanted to do with Prezi. So,
pretty much,
it's getting there. I mean, if you're smart about it, if you're smart about it, you can do it. And it's interesting. One of the reasons they did it was, one of the considerations was to make organization easier and to make a presentation easier. So they now have like these categories and subcategories, which is basically that whole thing of, nonlinear, that's hard for people to like be organized and to tell a story nonlinearly. It's tough. All right, let's
get on subject.
Yes.
Well, design projects are not all about the client. They're also not all about us. They're not about the designer specifically. A successful project requires both the client and the designer to create the final deliverable. A design client needs to provide details and feedback. The designer needs to ask the right questions. We get to guide the client. We offer designs that meet the requests, but we also work with designs that meet real-world use. Every designer, whether internal, freelance, at an agency, goes through a process of what I call client education. And our conversation today is about an unspoken topic that hopefully designers and design clients will find valuable.
All right, so we're talking about being a good design client. And we should point out that what we're talking about is not just for our sake, right? Not just for the designer's, you know, sanity, but being a good design client, knowing how to work with a designer is going to get you as the client the best results and outcomes possible. And it's going to make you look good and hopefully keep your stress level and your budget to a minimum. So yes, it's good for both sides of the equation, but let's from the beginning, like what should somebody know as a non-designer, as a client, whatever industry you are, what should they know about interviewing and hiring a professional designer?
I'd say it's a similar process, whether it's presentation, print, multimedia, large format.
There are definitely different considerations for print and web, but still, there's some basic things that you'll see that I think we'll cover.
Well, to that point, well, first of all, I love the way you say it's the way a client interviews the designer and decides on who to hire. And I've had those conversations. I've never really pictured them as an interview. More of an elimination process. But I think that's a great mindset, is that we're being interviewed, so we need to provide answers that kind of help guide and inform. First thing is, person hiring a designer should ask, does that designer have a specialty? Do they specialize in presentation design? Because I need a presentation. I probably shouldn't hire a print agency or a social media agency if I'm looking for a print design. If I'm looking for a presentation design end product, because I need somebody there. You know, are they web focused? Are they mobile app focused? Are they print focused? So question one, from a client's perspective is, hey, as designer, what is your specialty? Because I know what I need and I want to match to that.
Yeah, that's really smart. Because if you say, do you do presentation? Most design companies will probably say, oh yeah, we got a guy here who knows PowerPoint. You know, they may not use those words. They may just be thinking that. Mm-hmm. And depending on what you need, if you need a real professional, you know, corporate template or whatever, high stakes presentation, that's not going to cut it. In the same way that I see a lot of clients now starting on the website. They know they need a website, so they go to a web company, but they also need a logo. And they'll ask the web company, oh, hey, guys, do you do logos as well? Oh, yeah, we do that.
We can do that.
We do branding. We can do that. And I've cautioned some clients, like, that, you know, look at their portfolio. And that brings me to my advice. Look at their portfolio. Ask, you know, you've got to see the work. And if they have primarily a 99% web portfolio with maybe a logo here or there, maybe that's not, you know, maybe split it up. Maybe that's not the company for you. But with presentation,
go ahead.
With presentation designers, ask for portfolios. Any good presentation designer should be able to show you, you know, a good, you know, healthy portion of their work. They're not going to be able to show you everything because of, you know, client confidentiality and stuff. And that's actually, I think, a difference between web. You know, generally, if you're creating a website, it's most likely public.
Right.
But yeah, ask for portfolios, ask for spec work. There might be stuff on their website that's part of the portfolio. They might be able to send you even more. Like I have stuff on my site, but I will send you additional specific work, mm-hmm. you know, that's relevant to your industry and the project.
I like when clients ask me, "What is your process?" Because I go about it a little bit differently. I think bigger picture than just design. I think through the whole story. But I think oftentimes what clients are getting at when they do ask the process, and by the time I'm done explaining the process, they understand why then. What they really want to know is, what's my rate? And by the time I go through that process, they'll understand why my rate is probably higher than other people that they're talking with.
Yeah. There, you know, we've talked about red flags and things in the past, and sometimes I'll throw the rate out right up front.
Yeah. Because you don't want to waste too much.
Exactly. I can tell they're not into it. You know, what not to ask? I would say, please don't ask for spec work.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I don't think an established designer is going to say yes to that in this time frame. I think you're going to get a lot of junior designers or people that are looking to kind of build reputation and hope it goes somewhere. But yeah, spec work is and pro bono is a little different. You know, if they're just coming right out and like, hey, I've got this, I think that conversation is a little different than somebody saying, we'll see if we like it enough.
You know what? I think, Nolan, maybe this is more relevant to us since we experienced it so much in our ad agency days. There was spec work all the time in
all
pitches.
The time.
Yes.
And I think it was ridiculous. It's still out there. People are still doing it, giving away, you know, even if they're, you know, one of the dangers is, oh, you're going to create something that the clients then going to take. I forget that. I mean, if you create, you're just wasting resources and time, I think.
Yeah.
Also similar to that is, you know, try not to ask specific questions. I get emails out of the blue saying, how much will it cost to redesign all of our, I just got this yesterday. Yeah. How much will it cost to redesign all of our training materials? And literally like that, and they gave me their website. You can see them at our site, and I go to their site and I don't see anything. So, but also like, don't ask like upfront, do you think the presentation should be blue? I don't know. Like, hire me and we'll talk about it. Like,
exactly. Well, and that brings us to the kickoff. I mean, let's say you get the business. There's certain things then we need to address during an official project kickoff conversation.
Right. Before we start designing.
Yep,
right?
Exactly.
There are lots of questions. And I have always said that a good designer asks lots of questions, and don't get upset at us. Like, trust me, we are asking them for a reason and to help you. We are not asking them to hear ourselves talk. And this is the overarching advice. If you take away one thing, is tell your designer everything. There is patient designer confidentiality. Okay,
I love that.
Think of us as your lawyer or your doctor, because design solves problems. So don't talk about, you know, the surface. Don't talk about, is it blue? Is it red? Talk about what you're trying to solve. So not, you know, hey, can you design me a brochure? Well, yes, we can do that. But what you want to say is, and a good designer will get this out of you and ask the question, give me a brochure that is going to be mailed to my museum members whose membership has lapsed, and this is going to launch our campaign, and we're hoping for a 10% response rate, and it needs to go out by this date. All that information, all the budget restrictions, the internal deadlines, the approvals, that's going to help us not only give you, you know, an accurate quote and give you the right design, but it's also going to help us technically. Like, I've had a lot of clients say, you know, I want a postcard, you know, designed at, you know, let's say 4x7. And then I have to say, are you mailing this out? Do you know that's going to cost you more postage because it's not a standard size, right? I mean, it's all those things they don't even think about.
Yep. Okay. So then there's other questions, and maybe this is even a little further down the line, but I ask about the target audience. I want to know what their attitude is right now. It depends on what our objectives are. What's the objective of the presentation? What does the audience know about your project? Where do you want, what do you want them to end up with? What do you want them to walk away with? I want to know what the tone and the style is of the presentation. I'm asking all these questions. And like you said, Nolan, I'm not trying to be
difficult.
Pretentious, difficult.
Yeah.
Things that are going to make your presentation better.
So what are some of those questions?
Well, seriously, what's the audience? What are your objectives of this presentation? Mm-hmm. So it should be, we want people to set up a meeting for. We want them to set up a meeting to further review our project. I don't know, you know, our product. Okay, if that's what your objective is, you're walking in, what do they know about your product? Do they know you exist as a company? Do you, I'll ladder up. Okay. So if you want them to know this, so what does that mean?
And I think even if your charge is not content, and sometimes it's not, sometimes it's purely the design, even if it's not, that's not your charge here, tell them anyway, because we will still, even if I'm not being paid to write copy, if you tell me that you are, you know, pitching to investors and I see somewhere in the slide, hello, board members, I will tell you, hey, that's wrong.
So. Exactly. You know what I also want to know? I want to know the skill level of the people that are going to be using the presentation.
Oh, yeah.
You know, are they first-time presenters? Is it a sales force of 500? Okay, then I have to think about this a little bit differently than I would if it's three high-level executives who have very specific audiences every single time.
You know, I think you, you, I, after I get through some initials, you know, company background, you know, it's a dating phase. Do we like you? Do you like me? You know, things like that. But there, you evolve into technical questions, more conversation. I should say a technical conversation, and things like you're going with Sandy is, hey, let's go with the presentation project. Is this going to be projected?
Yes.
What's your end use of it? Is it going to be projected? Is it going to be printed? Is it going to be both? Mm-hmm. Is it a PDF deliverable? You know, is your printout from just right from PowerPoint? Are you making a PDF and then binding it? But PowerPoint is your PowerPoint doc type of scenario. If you print it, is it your printer? Is it the laser printer in the office? Do you use a real printer? Are you expecting us to come up with a print solution? So there's a lot of technical conversations. And then that could go into... well, all kinds of other things. Like Sandy, go ahead and run through your list, Sandy.
I have an intake document that I don't always complete it. I don't have the client sign off on it, but right now I probably have it memorized.
You hear that, clients? She's judging you with a list right off the bat. Speed dating at its best. Check mark. Oh, you don't make their grade. Sorry.
No, it's almost to make sure that I don't forget to address something. For example, you know, what's your deadline?
Yes.
Right? And that's another thing that we want clients to be straightforward with us on.
You know, here's a question I have to ask a lot of my foundation and nonprofit clients. Do you want to share this as Creative Commons later? Some of them want to post it as Creative Commons, and I have to explain to them, we can't just use our Shutterstock imagery, and you can't then just say, this presentation is Creative Commons.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a whole big thing, because then we got to go get Creative Commons imagery.
Okay. Well, and then from that timeline standpoint, you know, when we're asking people to be honest with us and straightforward, it's, is it in 2 weeks? What does that mean, 2 weeks? Does that mean we have to have the final delivered in 2 weeks, or you want to see a first draft in 2 weeks? Who are the people that have to approve it? Is the decision maker going to be on the telephone and be involved in every step of the process? All those types of things that allow us to be set up for success for you.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. So that does it allow for two rounds? I usually include two rounds of approvals, or feedback, I should say.
That's interesting. I do the same thing. Our estimates I estimate out with includes two rounds of revision requests. Up to. I always say up to. Right. They don't use them, they're not getting a discount, but they can get up to two rounds. And that's what we're anticipating. And I usually say minor revisions, not like complete rewrites. Like, hey, we're going to now talk about water instead of sand. So let's change the entire project. But same project.
Right.
Like, no. There's nothing the same.
Well, and I try to set expectations. When we put together a timeline, everything is created in a realistic time frame. If they want something with a 24-hour feedback or turnaround and it's just a couple of tweaks, I need to let them know that that's okay. But if it's a major, you know, you've got major edits and now all of a sudden you haven't gotten back to me, I only have 24 hours to turn it around, they might get some rush charges there.
And this is, again, like the advice to clients is be honest about that. Like as you're talking to Sandy about the timeline, don't lie and say, oh yeah, we've got a week on that when you secretly know like it's less than that, because that's not cool.
Yeah, I had someone, I don't know if they were afraid of me or what happened, but you know, we're working on a very, very large project. I was already working on maybe 10 presentations. And somehow, for some reason, I got an email from him that said, okay, I'm going to send you the other 30. Remember, we need those by blank date. And I said, what other 30 presentations? And he didn't respond. So I just copied his boss. I said, we have to talk, because that was, if he was afraid, he was new, he just didn't want to be honest with
me. Or he had screwed up and now was blaming it on you.
I mean, it wasn't even a blame. It was like, let me see if I can slip this under and see if she'll do it.
And slip it by Sandy. What about inappropriate asks? Like what, you know, we talked about spec work a little bit, but, you know, how about like not asking us to solve problems we can't or shouldn't?
There you go.
Right. You know, in doing like sales presentations, it comes up a lot. Clients will say, you know, our sales staff really doesn't understand the product. So, you know, we need a beautifully designed presentation. And I tell them, I said, that's not my, I can't solve that. Yeah. Like, you know, that's a, and a lot of times I will literally say, okay, now we're into a business consulting, you mm-hmm. know, job. And that's mm-hmm. not me. Mm-hmm. Like if your business is not running, and I always tell clients, I assume that you know, you are experts in whatever you do and you understand the story you're trying to tell. I will help you tell it in the most effective way. But if you don't understand it to begin with, if your salespeople don't understand it to begin with, don't ask me to solve that mm-hmm. because that's not what I do.
Exactly. I've been asked to copy content.
What do you mean?
How copy? So?
Well, an organization, a training organization asked me to create a presentation based on a publication that they didn't Ooh. Create.
Yeah. I was afraid you were going to say something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah. And so I.
What'd you do? That's what. Well, what how'd you handle
it? I asked him to get permission. I asked him to get permission in writing, and he said, "Okay, go ahead and get started on this. I'll work on permission." Well, nope. I did not get started on it, and I
never. And they never got permission.
Never got in. Never came back to me.
Oh, that's so slimy.
Yeah.
You know, we run this fine. Okay, I'll personalize it. I run this fine line. I think we all do, but I'll mm-hmm. just take the blame here. We run this fine line of being asked to provide input on marketing materials. And sometimes it's very specific, you know, verify the financials are accurate. And if something is in the right industry language for wherever they are, I usually have an opinion. But experience is talking from my standpoint, because I've worked with so many different organizations, so many different industries, you know, I'll have an opinion and I'll let them know, hey, as the designer, I don't think the general public would understand that these numbers relate to this.
Yeah.
But I'm also not saying that it's something that a client should generally ask the designer for. I mean, I've been given spreadsheets. It's very, you know, amazingly detailed internal corporate numbers. And they'll say, hey, can you pull from, you know, there's four tabs in there. We need to pull from that and come up with the margin on or the EBITDA on or, yeah. or you know, something. I'm like, first of all, I'm not an analyst.
That's not
you know,
me.
There are people in your organization that can do it. You know, I've got 3 college degrees and no math courses to my name. So I'm not the person you want to have accomplishing this. Can I do it? Most likely. Do you want to? Because you're now putting numbers out there that are, or it could be anything. Hey, what are the competitors? Can you research what the competitors do in for this product range and, you know, make sure that we're in alignment? I'm like, that's different than content design. That's a whole nother entity. Now, unlike you, Nolan, I'll say we can accomplish that. I will bring in our partners that accomplish that, and we can either fold their numbers into our invoice to you, or you can invoice them directly. But I let them know that it's outside the scope of the project.
Yep.
It's outside the scope of our expertise. And if they're willing to pay for it, I'm willing to coordinate it. We have some great copy editors. I have some great industry researchers in, you know, in the financial realm, in the automobile realm, in the, well, especially in the medical realm, a lot of medical writers. But, you know, I think that as a client, you're just looking for a solution and you have somebody to talk to. We've built a relationship. Can you solve this? And our job is...
Yeah, I mean,
it's an inappropriate ask, but you don't know it's inappropriate. So our job is to say,
right.
Here's what we cannot do.
And also, they might just completely trust you. And that's they work right. with you over and over, and you're a smart person. And like of all their vendors, they like you the most. So, hey, can you help me? Like, I trust you more than, you know, mm-hmm. my CFO that I would have to go to. So can you do this for me?
What about changing the topic slightly from that? What, because this can also be inappropriate, but what about timing of a project? You know, when you set up a project, you've got to come up with this. When's the deliverable? When are the review cycles? And sure. Sometimes those conversations can go well. Sometimes they don't go, and sometimes they go without the full details. So I think as a client, you want to make sure that there's a discussion about timing to make sure everything's up front.
Exactly. And that's part of that's in writing, whether I do a formal proposal or an email. We always put together a step-by-step timeline, and we make sure that we indicate where the client has to be accountable. I will even indicate, if necessary, and this isn't all the time, but if we have maybe a faster-paced project, the time of day that I expect the client to get back to me, the time of day I expect to deliver the project.
Oh, yeah, I would totally go with that, respecting, you know, our time, because unfortunately you're probably not our only client at that particular day.
And we try to feel like it, right?
Yeah, that's our goal, to make sure that you are well, you know, you're getting all of the services and attention you need to make this project come to fruition, but we're also kind of creating a balance between other ones. So, you know, respecting our time is very important. If you need a proof the next day, but you're not delivering to your designer the feedback till 4 p.m., mm-hmm. that's not the same as giving it to us at 10 a.m.
Right.
And yeah. your expectations will be easily met. You know, timely responses to proofs and questions, I think, are one of the biggest, one of the biggest timeline factors. You know, let us know when you need time to get back to us. So if we're expecting a proof before lunch, because we'll often say, you know, it's before lunch hour, mm-hmm. and you automatically know that you've suddenly got 9 other meetings and calls and things and everything, a quick, hey, this isn't going to happen till end of day, just to let you know. One, it'll let us reshuffle and do other projects, prioritize them earlier. So maybe we can actually make that late afternoon time work for you. But on the other hand, if we're holding our time open, I don't know if you guys do this, but we'll hold, you know, we'll block out time for this client and like, get to other things if nothing comes in. But, you know, this is our real priority.
Yeah.
Well, if we can unprioritize you and prioritize you for later, it's to your advantage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And be honest with us, because we get it. Things change and the person didn't get you the content. But tell us, like, as soon as possible when you know you're not going to hit the deadline. And also, like, taking a step backwards, bring us in at the right time in your project and have us begin work at the right time. It's kind of like a not too early, not too late. Mm-hmm. You know, some clients will say, I've got this presentation in 6 months. You know, can you do it? I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to do anything right now. And call me as the time gets closer. But then you also have the people like, okay, we have this annual conference and we've known about it and we have our
starts AV on Monday and today's Friday.
Exactly. So our CEO needs a presentation. We're ready. We have content. We're ready now. Okay. Or they'll say like, remember we talked 6 months ago? We're ready now. And it's like, how about you tell me that a month ago? So
exactly.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about feedback and approvals.
Okay.
I'll say, tell us what you like, not just what you hate. Also, one voice, you know, we get it. You've got a lot of people on your end, you know, coming together. But we have to hear one voice. We can't hear, well, John thinks it should be blue, but Debbie thinks it should be red. So there's the feedback.
Yeah. Okay, decide.
Yeah. I mean, we can talk it out with you. But if you're not in a position to ultimately make the decision, then we have to talk to John and Debbie or their boss directly. Here's a big one for me. And this sort of like goes with what we just said. Don't give us feedback that you yourself don't understand. This drives me up
right.
a wall.
You asked the question. So what do you think, you know, so can you clarify that for me?
No. Let me get back to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or they'll say, okay, I think this one needs to be a little more zhuzhy. And you'll say, okay, well, what does that mean? Do you mean bolder or brighter? Well, you know, zhuzhy. I'm like, no, I don't know. Well, that's what my boss said. And it's like, yeah, but I don't know how to act on that. Can I talk to your boss? No.
Mm, yeah.
Don't put us in that position. It's not cool.
You know, to that point, so I have this saying, and it's 100% true, and I usually bring it up when a designer on our team is just super frustrated with a client. And my statement is this, and it's just, you know, kind of experience talking. And I 100% believe it is that people know what they do not like. They cannot explain what they want. So our job is to give them something to react to, but we're trying to guide their decisions. Almost all template projects, as example, we will supply 3 concepts and they are very, very much concepts. They are nothing that could be, that's great. Send that one over to me. Like, no. That was kind of a Photoshop, Illustrator, PowerPoint, Frankenstein concept. It looks good to get your feedback. Now we actually need to build it. You know, so that's my saying is, you know, because people don't know what zhuzhy is. I've never heard that word before.
I'm making
so, you know, but we could say, okay, so obviously you don't know what it is that we're looking for. Let me try this in 2 different realms and you tell me which one hits. Because I really think that people want to make a decision, but they don't know what they're deciding on. So one, they know what they don't like when they see it. And two, if I give them multiple options, they pick one and they feel like they're in control, but I know both options can come to fruition.
So when you're in concepting phase, do you ever, I've done this, I guess I should just say, I've suggested that they show me things they like in advance before I even start concepting. Let's say there isn't a corporate branding standards manual and you're starting from scratch. Show me websites where you like the design. Show me print materials where you really like.
Oh, yeah, like mood boarding? Yeah.
Exactly.
And it doesn't have to necessarily be other presentations.
Right, right.
Be like, I love this ad campaign. Okay.
Yeah, great. Yeah. What do you like about it?
I think I mentioned this one before, but you know, the one in most recent history that stings the most, we got a project. I'm sure we talked about this. It was one where it was basically we were taking a brochure and making a presentation out of it for a very large company. And so we had the corporate brand guidelines. We looked at the corporate website. We looked at the print brochure and we took the content and we built a full template. We didn't, again, because it was so defined, we didn't create concepts. We're like, we'll make a template based on the corporate look. That's not the corporate PowerPoint. It's very visual. You'll use their styling cues that they've already used. We took all the content, break it down. About a week later, yeah, that really wasn't what we were looking for. Here's what we did. They sent it to us and it was an agency's work. So first of all, it was beautiful, completely off brand. So it was an agency they've obviously worked with before. They knew what the person wanted and they knew what they would get a yes to, but it was a horrible executed presentation. I mean, if they would have said, here's what we want, build it into presentation,
yeah,
it could have been so much further along because it's such, this is the thing they're releasing to their sales force, completely non-functional from a presentation standpoint. It was just non-functional, but it met the aesthetics, which we had no impact for because I didn't think we needed concepting because we were told it needs to be corporate branded. And yeah, that one stings.
Oh, owie. I don't remember that one, but owie.
Oh, yeah.
How about this? This comes from Miguel Montero, who's written. Mike Montero.
He's a great author.
Yeah, I'm going to keep mentioning these books. We'll put them in the show notes. He's got a great book called You're My Favorite Client, which is all what we're talking about today. And he also, his first book was Design as a Job, which is brilliant. But one of his tips is don't bury the lead. We've all seen it. I've seen it. You know, you go through a half hour feedback session and they're like, okay, you know, this should be closer to there. And this is too tight here. And we need a new slide and we need this. And then at the end they say, and then we don't like the design overall. And it's not really going to work for us. So if you can give us some new.
Can you start over?
Right, exactly. So get to the, if it's a painful thing you have to tell us, just get it out of the way.
Band-aid, rip it off quick. Just let us work with it.
Don't try to talk around it.
Oh. So here, maybe it's similar. I want to know who the decision maker is, and I want that decision maker to be on calls, and I want the decision maker to provide specific feedback. Recently, I'm being pulled into a project, and after we get started on it, it's, well, our CCO is going to have a huge opinion on this. Okay, why isn't he here? Why wasn't he involved in the directional conversation? I know C-suite is a little less accessible. Right. But in this case, the person who was explaining things to me, I don't believe had the ability to be that conduit, that liaison. Yeah. I don't know that she was doing the best job. So as much as possible, I want that decision maker to be involved in the process. Maybe that's where my intake document, my blueprint, gets signed by them.
And you also, and even if you don't, even if that C-suite person or whoever cannot be part of the process, at least tell us, because you don't want to be way down in a presentation thinking that your contact is the decision maker. And then they say, oh, my boss, you know, thinks that, or the creative director of the company said, you know, we can't do that. I was like, oh, there's a creative director involved, and I didn't know that.
You know, been nice to I will say that our TLC contract, it says just we need a point of contact that is a decision maker.
Yep.
And we've been in a position where the creative director, the CEO, anybody above them says, you know, hey, calls up, we want to do this. I'm like, hey, I need John's sign off on that. Well, John is my employee. I'm like, yeah, but on my contract, he is my point of contact and he's actually the one. You just tell him exactly the same thing and then I can sign off on it, but I can't make decisions for everybody in the company or I can't make revisions based on everybody in the company. Otherwise, I'd be afraid of what you end up with. So because we've assigned one person, just run it through him. And that way I know it's coming through the funnel and we're staying in order and we're keeping things on track as best as possible. And when John gets on, I go, what is going on? Did you didn't get buy-off on this? We're now changing. Okay, so it's a different conversation.
And from a financial standpoint, if your point of contact, who speaks for the company, has approved something,
yeah,
and then his boss, goes back and changes
exactly.
it,
exactly,
you've done your job, and you can now start charging more because it's already been approved. Like, why, according to the contract?
You know, another conversation, seeing how we're talking from the client's perspective, and let's go with this: the conversation. If you're an executive listening. And you have anybody from your admin to a key analyst to somebody in marketing heading up this design project for you, check to make sure they're not being overly zealous or protective of you and making decisions that are not yours. Because I'm sure you've experienced this, where you're working on something like, no. The numbers are really going to need to be focused on these things right here. Like, oh, okay. The original content didn't really kind of indicate that. So you kind of go down this design path because they're very concerned that their executive is going to want to talk about that. And then you finally get feedback. I don't care about those. Mm-hmm. Like, wait. Who's driving the conversation here? There's a lot of up and coming people that start making decisions to try and be very impressive, to almost be overly helpful to their executive team. And the executive team really doesn't have a vested interest in anything they're going on. So suddenly you're kind of going down these little rabbit holes of just working in things that don't really need that much focus. We experience that a lot.
Can I throw out a very, very simple one? If we send you a file, tell us you got it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Oh my God. And I find this a lot with younger people. Like, you'll go back and forth in an email chain, and you finally send the file, and then it's crickets. And then like a day later, I'll say, hey, did you get this? Oh yeah, I got it. Like, just yep. It's kind of rude. I mean, just tell us, because especially with attachments, you never know. You're always worried.
Or conversely, I'll take kind of responsibility for this, but our agreement was, you will tell me when you've uploaded that file. Mm-hmm. That was supposed to happen by the end of the day Friday. I never got the email. So Sunday, when I went to follow up on it, I hadn't gotten the email, and I couldn't find the file in the folder where it had been uploaded. They never told me that. Okay, so
then
I followed
up. Put into a subfolder in the the proofs. Yeah. Old, and suddenly the new version's in there. You wouldn't know to look there.
Exactly. I never got the email to look for it. I never got it. So we missed 48 hours of project time because that I had agreed to work over the weekend on that particular project.
Do you both use Outlook? And specifically, I use Outlook's confirm receipt feature, the little check. I wish I could open up an email. And I think it's useless. I don't think it actually works that great because, you don't, if you say, hey, confirm you've read this. I actually use the one that says confirm it got there. As example, it was actually just this morning. I sent it off an email for some project questions and I did the little checkbox, confirm sent or whatever. And sure enough, it bounced back. Now this particular company, they're having some domain issues. I don't think somebody remembered to register their domain or renew it. So, and I was going to, sure enough, I got a bounce back from one out of the five people, the one person that has to make the decisions. I got a note saying, hey, this is undeliverable. So I forwarded it again to their offline account that they had already given me. So here's what I do. I do use the confirm receipt feature on a lot of key documents. I don't use it on everything because it's on everything. It gets ignored. But if it's a key proof, if it's an invoice, first of all, I shouldn't be sending invoices. But if I am, you're in trouble because it got pushed to me. I use it as a way to follow up, though, is what I really do. If I send a proof and I do not hear back from you by, say, the following day, I send a nice email saying, hey, the proof was sent yesterday, but I did not receive that automated confirmation, so I'm just making sure you had it. It's really just a mechanism for me to follow up with almost a stock copy-paste letter email that says, can you respond to me, please? Doesn't help your situation, Sandy, where they send something and you don't know about it. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
I do use Outlook, but more as a mechanism to give me a way to politely say, hey, I need to follow up with you.
Mm-hmm. And, yep.
I do not do that. In fact, it's supposedly available on Outlook for Mac, but it I don't see it. It doesn't seem to be.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah, so check that.
So just so you know, whenever I open it and I get that the sender wants to know if you've opened this, I always click no.
Yeah, but you've now given me an excuse to follow up with you if you don't follow up with me. That's okay. I don't really care if you say yes or no. I just want a mechanism to say, hey, I sent this. I didn't get a response from you, and the automated one didn't say it was received, so I'm just following up to make sure you got it so we stay on track. So okay. It's really become more of a crutch or an excuse to give another follow-up to get a response.
Understood. Good one.
Microsoft probably doesn't like to hear that because it's probably a very cool feature. I don't really care if it works or not. It just, you know, business stuff.
How about, let's talk about trouble, like big changes of scope, dealing with just project trouble, firing a designer. Have you guys been fired? I have.
Yeah. You know,
the one I just... clients too. I mean, it goes both ways.
Yeah.
It goes both ways. The one we talked about, I felt we were fired. The one I was just talking about where we did all the design work and they just kind of said, hey, they paid us for our, we took our deposit up front and they paid us the deposit and just said, hey, we're ending the project right now. And they did only receive a PDF. So they didn't receive the final deliverable. But I kind of felt like I was fired on that one, especially even though we did the design work, it just didn't meet what they wanted, which is really funny because they didn't define what they wanted.
So, I mean, I'll talk about firing. Before you even consider it, you know, make sure you've actually tried to address the problem and that the designer has actually followed your directions. And I am not going to stick up for a designer if you have told them 10 times mm-hmm. that the logo needs to be included and they just are not doing it for whatever reason, you know, that's a reason. But if they have been following your advice at all times, it's not, you know, they have been making a good faith effort. Now, they might not mm-hmm. be capable. You know, if you keep saying, you know, I need this bold and bright and everything they keep coming back just isn't and they're not capable, that's one thing. But if you've been saying, you know, make it red, okay, we'll make it red. And then you come back and like, I hate it. Why is it red? Mm-hmm. That's not their problem. So make a good faith effort to fix it. If you've hired a good designer, you know, they'll be more than happy to, you know, to work with you and they'll generally, you know, a lot of times know that it's not perfect on their end as well. And they'll want to, you know, fix it. You know, but another thing is, I mean, have you rushed them? You know, if you initially talked about having a week to turn something around and then you tell them, oh my God, my CEO is breathing down my neck. He has to see something tomorrow. And the designer agrees, you know, some designers will say no, but if the designer says, okay, I'm going to send you something, it's incomplete. I don't, you know, usually do this, but I want to work with you. So here are the caveats. It's incomplete. It's in process. You can't come back to him when the CEO hates it and say, well, this is terrible. So
you're right.
Anyway.
Yes.
But I would say ultimately, you know, if you really just have a bad relationship back and forth and nobody seems to be able to on the same topic, the designer will be happy to be fired. That was I had that a year or two ago where we just couldn't communicate with each other. Well, they would say bigger, I'd make it bigger. They'd say, why is it so big?
I'm like, right.
Okay, I'll make it smaller. Why is it so small? Like,
so that's language. That's language. And so let's talk about language. You know, what I think there is an opportunity to establish or to understand.
Wait, I bet I know where you're going, Sandy. Let me throw this one in because it kind of dovetails on Nolan's.
Okay.
And this is language. So I'll just read from our base master service agreement. Hold on, where'd it go? Intellectual confidentiality, deliverables and acceptance. If client is not satisfied with any design work, they will inform TLC and allow TLC the opportunity to address the problem. If TLC is unable to provide a solution that meets client needs, termination clauses can go into effect. So basically we're saying up front, I'm trying to say is, listen, we know that some things don't work out. We don't anticipate that here. But if they're not going to work out, let's just be adults about it and say, here's what I really need. Can you make this happen and give us a chance to do it? And if we can't, we can say, you know, listen, maybe there are other resources out there that are better suited to your needs.
Mm-hmm. No, when I'm talking, and I think that's awesome, good
language. I think you're talking like the technical language.
I am. And not to get into a template discussion again, but I think one of the key words we need to agree on in the beginning is template. What is a template?
Absolutely.
Tell me about other language that you think the client would be best served if they understood.
I have a conversation a lot. I say, hey, this is our design language. So I kind of put it on us. Like you, the client, probably should not know this unless we've worked together. But we have our own internal design language.
Mm-hmm.
As example, if it's a print job and we say, you know, we need to design this with bleed. We actually just had this where the proofs went out and they showed bleed. And the client was like, and their corporate branding is all squares. So suddenly all these ones on the edge were rectangles because they showed the extra amount for bleed. And I in a conversation said, well, that's the bleed area. I don't care what it is. I need them to be squares. I'm like, oh my gosh. So first of all, I had to talk to our designers. Like, okay, listen, you need to show, we need to show this one with trim marks and not the bleed area on their proofs. Mm-hmm. Cause you know, it's just a language barrier where they don't understand that those are the areas that are going to be cut, you know, this and that. So on a print job, there are some specific things. Widescreen. Yep. Well, is it 16B? Well, actually, you could say widescreen three different ways. Widescreen, 16 by 9, and HD are all going to reference kind of like the modern aspect ratio. Mm-hmm. So, but maybe the person's only familiar with widescreen. They don't know what 16 by 9 is. That's just a jumble of numbers. So we should probably define those things. Mm-hmm. Aspect ratio, master slide versus master layout is a big one. Linked versus editable, Excel and chart table. Mm-hmm. Data, oh my gosh, that one comes up all the time.
Embedded.
Well, we can't actually edit that because it's linked. I don't care. You've got it on the slide. Well, there's a custom fonts, which is anything that's not a Microsoft standard font. Those are, is that what you're talking about? That's our design
that's
language.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I mean. Yeah. Exactly.
Reminds me of the one of my favorite scenes from Spinal Tap where the designer draws out on the napkin the Stonehenge monument and she writes 18 inches. And they look at it and they say, yeah, that's what we want. And she gives them an 18-inch thing. And they thought that meant feet. So they didn't know and the line is, it's not my fault if you don't understand the difference between inches and feet.
Yep, but, exactly.
So what about managing, just sort of general tips for managing the relationship, not getting into these. We already talked about that a lot, but just sort of some more relationship building tips.
I picture Sandy's approach as June Cleaver. Everything is great. Let me put my apron on. We'll work this out.
It's usually pretty happy, I have to say. I mean, I make it comfortable, casual, but I'm pretty buttoned up too. So
you know, I'm going to get in so much trouble for saying this, but I it has nothing to do with Sandy. I feel like the relationships I like to have.
You're stuttering a lot.
Yeah. I am because I'm happy if the client is a little bit scared of me. And this was when I was working in an agency and working now with clients. Now, this is not always the case, and I certainly have great relationships with people. But if they're just a little bit tentative or scared about what I might say, yeah.
It's a respect.
It is.
Yes.
Because, and this goes back to, you know, the difference between working in-house and for yourself is when you work in-house, somebody sends you an email saying, I need this by this time. When you work for yourself, they send you an email and says, I need this. Are you available to do this?
Right.
And that's the respect. They're asking permission. They're not just assuming that you'll be able to do whatever they're asking in whatever time frame.
I think this is actually a really good like new designer versus experienced designer topic. I can think back and remember us, Lori and I, when we were just starting out, really doing some stupid things that a client requested. And they might have been because, you know, it was like, hey, can we do this design as a two-color print job instead of four-color? I'm like, but you have four-color photos. Sure, we'll make it work. You know, we did, you know, it's like, these are not things that you should say yes to. Can we have all these things animate to do this and this and this and this? Like, yeah, absolutely. And then you get through it and they're like, wait a minute, that was like a 9-second animation and people want to read the key focal point doesn't come up until second number eight. The person's done talking, you know. Now I can calmly say a couple of things. One, it's, you know, this isn't within the project scope. It's probably not a good idea for, you know, a real world application and use of this. It's not a good idea if we want to assure a deliverable within the needed timeline that we agreed upon. Basically experience gives a designer the ability to stand up and say no when needed.
Exactly.
And it's a lot of times to the client's benefit that we do that. So,
yeah. Well, and this idea of mutual respect, like, you know, what goes along with that is don't bring other designers or design voices into the process. You know, it might be a situation where we are working with a creative director in-house or a designer mm-hmm. for some reason, and you establish those parameters up front. But, you know, don't say, oh, my cousin does web design and he suggested you do this.
Or
our in-house designer said this, I showed it to him. It's like, can I talk to him? Is he the decision maker? No. Well, then, you know, it's like.
Okay, real world story to go along with this point. Worked with a corporation who has a incredible brand standards. I mean, everything is guidelined. I mean, you know what is on brand and what is not. It is pretty painfully obvious when you're not. And we were asked to develop logo, a branding environment, a PowerPoint template that would, you know, all would coordinate. So we went down the path of doing the same things we always do. Hey, we're going to provide, in this case, we came up with four different concepts. It might have actually been five. And we handed them all off. And there's an intermediary between us and the end client, the corporation with the incredible brand standards. We went through a 2-hour brand standards training before we were allowed to work on this stuff, because that's their methodology for this corporation, which is incredible on many levels. So we delivered stuff, and internal creative director didn't like them. Wanted more, what was the word, Nolan? They wanted more zhuzhi. And next thing you know, we're evolving this thing. It looked beautiful, and they're sending it to the client, and the client got the stuff and said, these are horrendous. You guys don't even know what our brand standards are. Oh. Kind of put the blame on us, because, you know, we're the design firm.
Right.
The whole thing got shot down. They said, never mind, we'll just do it internally. So,
oh, Troy.
it gets good at the very end. But, okay. But then, so they designed this template that is just, it's very corporate bland. And it wasn't executed well at all. I mean, if they would have just done those template technical reviews, because the template was, I mean, it actually had master layouts with the concepts that they had built internally in it that were never supposed to see the light of day, but they distributed them. So suddenly people are pulling up layouts with these, just completely not understanding the back end structure of mm-hmm. how a PowerPoint template can be utilized. So I firmly believe that our initial designs, the client never saw them, because I got to work with the client directly eventually. They never saw them. It's just what you're saying, Nolan. Somebody got in between us, changed the parameters, and completely derailed the project to where the client just took it on themselves.
Wow.
Beware a designer that doesn't piss you off once in a while.
Yeah. Okay, who said that?
That's Mike Montero. Maybe you have other context, but in terms of you need a designer to push back on you. Mm-hmm. You want a designer to stand up. You know, and so when you say, hey, I'd like the logo bigger, you know, you want the designer to say, okay, so the reason I suggest not doing that is because of this, this, and this, mm-hmm. and this reason. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason. You, if you're working with a good designer, you want to assume and keep this in the back of your mind that every choice they have made is for a reason. It's not random. They put the logo to a certain size for a reason. It doesn't mean it can't change.
Right.
And it doesn't mean that if you want to override that decision and all that advice and everything that they won't do it. But it is a designer that just rolls over, you know, just is not the one you want to work with. And that said, if you have a relationship where you are constantly overriding them and beating them down, they will get to a point where they don't care anymore.
Exactly.
And they will just say, yeah, whatever, this is the bad decision, but whatever you want, I'll do it. And generally that happens after like 2 or 3 times of the same question being asked or the same request. And if you get get a designer into that position, that's bad for you.
In the show notes, Mike Montero wrote, these are books that are a couple of years old, and I read, what's the first one?
Design is a job.
Design is a job was one of the ones I read as a. It's a great book if you're a designer. If you're a client, an even better book is the one he wrote it for. Basically, for clients, right? He's a little offensive. He has quotes like "Beware the designer that doesn't piss you off." That might be a little bit of a tamer quote.
Very tame. Don't follow him on Twitter if you're easily offended.
Oh, really? I don't. Anyways, he does have some good insights, because he's bold enough to kind of put things out there, I guess. Mm-hmm. Moxie, is that a good word? Can we throw
moxie?
That in?
That's a good word.
It goes beyond that. Yeah. But, and he has some great YouTube lectures and things.
Oh, really? I've never. And,
In fact, so I think the one that sort of got him a lot of notoriety is, and it's on, you can find it on YouTube, is I think the title is F You, Pay Me.
Oh, yeah.
So that addressed to a client. Okay, so any last tips that we sort of didn't cover?
You know, we didn't talk about is time zones. I think time zones can be your friend. If you're on the East Coast, which happens to us a lot, hey, get us that info in your morning when I'm still sound asleep, so that when we get into the office, we're going to be able to work on your stuff because we've gotten your feedback. You know, make it use time zones to your priority, to your advantage. I would say is It's a good, smart thing to do. If it's there, don't make it a problem. Make it a priority and an advantage.
Cool. Well, my last tip is also going to be my pro and tech tip, which are Mike Montero's books. Just they're, you know, everything we talked about is in there and much, much more.
I just wanted to say the tip is just remember, we love what we do and we want to do our best job for you. We have pride and we're not going to if you can trust us, if you can respect us, you know, you're going to get the best product. You're going to love it. So that's just my last 2 cents.
I think that's a good note to end on that. Yeah.
Being a good client to your designer has many benefits: budget, goodwill, being a priority on the projects, receiving top quality work from your designer are just a few of the things as a design client you influence. Design projects, well, they do require both the client and the designer to interact and create the final deliverable. Details, feedback, and the right questions are all key ingredients for a successful project. Hopefully this conversation brought to light a lot of them. I know it's a kind of a grumbling conversation that's held on the client side within your team. Designers often grumble about it, but a conversation up front, hopefully like this, kind of helps bring it all together and make things run smooth for everyone.
On to pro and tech tips. I know that Nolan, you've already mentioned Mike Montero's books. So how about you, Troy?
I got one just came up. And if you have a GoPro,
yes,
the GoPro has a video out option, but it's a micro HDMI. Now, micro HDMI is not going to be a very common thing. I think if you're in your GoPro bag, you should have a little you should have a micro HDMI to regular HDMI adapter because it will be important.
Okay.
$4, I don't know, $6. I'll put a link to it on Amazon. You can buy them anywhere. But if you have a GoPro, you really should have a micro HDMI to full-size HDMI adapter so you can plug it into anything.
I like it. I'm recommending this podcast, and forgive me if I've mispronounced it, but it's the Neewer NW5 Foldable Adjustable Portable Sound Absorbing. Sound absorbing vocal recording panel. Oh my God. Anyway,
that is a mouthful, but I know exactly what it is.
Yes. And I bought it recently because I was traveling. And if you've heard me before, sometimes when I'm traveling, I don't get the best sound. And I was going to be in a hotel room during a podcast and I decided I needed this. So I ended up ordering this very easy to fold up. I ended up putting it in my suitcase and I'm using it right now. I actually like it in my office. I would recommend it. I've got a link in the notes if you need it for your podcast, any kind of recording that you do for training. I'd suggest that you get it.
You know, at some point we probably should get photos of all of us although I record half of them from my home office where I actually use a similar thing. It's not nearly as compact as the one you've got. And then in my design studio office, it's all sound insulated. So I just have a boom mic there, but it's very, very, and you sound fantastic. Well, hopefully everybody will notice the difference when we get it.
That's great.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a design studio team full of talented designers that focus on presentation design. Check us out at tlccreative.com, facebook.com/tlccreative, and thepowerpointblog.com.
This is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz. You can visit my website at presentationwiz.biz, my blog at pptwizblog, and I'm also with the Presentation Guild, presentationguild.org, or just search for Sandy Johnson PowerPoint in your web browser and you'll learn all kinds of things about me.
This is Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com, where you can get lots of goodies and downloads if you subscribe. And if your organization is looking for presentation or data viz training, give us a call and see all our work at nolanhamescreative.com.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.